Mystics on the Road to Vanishing Point by John Robinson. Copyright 2002 by John Robinson. Prologue 1. 2 hours before, the boxes of cigars, one blue and one pink, sat in his lap nervously anticipating which of them would be chosen. Now these same boxes were on the standard issue waiting table, forgotten along with the obligatory copies of Red Book, Cosmopolitan, and Woman's Day, all of them hopelessly out of date. His unnerved mind wondered absently what in the world they were thinking when they decided on women's magazines for the waiting room by the maternity ward. I don't think most of the women in this part of the hospital are much interested in the three latest recipes for better brownies, he thought to himself. Maybe Anesthesiologists Monthly would have been a better choice. The seat which he had inhabited was vacant, the indentation his presence left now little more than a memory on the vinyl. If he could feel his legs, he would know they were tired. They were sick of pacing back and forth, to and fro. They would be begging, "Please, can we sit? Can we just sit?" He ignored them, however, for his mind was elsewhere. The green gown he shambled around in could have, under some circumstances, symbolized the promise of life, but the sickly fluorescent lighting turned its color into something less than desirable. The garment, which was now completely unnecessary, was as forgotten as the matching slippers he had been given in order to witness the hallowed event. There had been no pretense when the situation began to go wrong. There had been no time for pretense. He was instantly escorted outside. After a few minutes, the doctor in charge had come out briefly to explain. Mills? Miller? What was his name? It didn't matter. Situation was the term that Mills Miller had used. It had never occurred to him before that such an everyday word could take on such ominous overtones. He supposed the simplest of words did so in such a place as this, one that specialized in healing and death. That one simple word seemed to hang in the air maliciously each time it escaped the obstetrician's lips. He had not cared for it. The details of the situation seemed to be just out of his reach at the present moment. There seemed to be a maelstrom at the very center of his mind. It was barely held in check by sheer force of will, fueled by the knowledge that he would do her no good as a gibbering idiot. The short obstetrician with glasses, whose name he could not remember to save his life, had covered the situation quickly before disappearing back into the delivery room. The labor becoming complicated, the baby not completely dropped, some other things, he tried to focus, but it was so hard. It did not all come to him. He grew suddenly frustrated and angry at his helplessness. He was a doctor himself, was he not? That damn piece of paper on the wall of his study meant something, didn't it? There had to be something he could do. But the answer came back to him quickly. No, on both counts. Not here, and not now. Now and here, he was just another worried husband who, in his real life, happened to be a general practitioner. That real life was long gone, though, and he had to deliver his wife into the care of strangers. For at least the 100th time, he shuffled distractedly to the swinging double doors to look through the plastic windows for some sign of something. For at least the 100th time, he saw nothing but another set of double doors just 10 yards away, staring back at him dumbly. He felt in some dim fashion that he had always done this, and everything else that had occurred before this last hour, before he was taken from the delivery room to his semi-existence in the waiting room, had been a dream and nothing more. It all felt so unreal. He stood there in the sterile hallway and looked around the sparse setting. Nurses occasionally strolled by, little white hats pinned to their hair, trademark apologetic half-smiles pinned to their faces, but beyond that there was no traffic. At this time of early morning, just after the passing of the previous day and the creation of the new, not much stirred. He felt more alone and helpless than ever before. He finally went to the seat which he vacated a lifetime ago and sat. He massaged his temples, and an image came to him. It was her, coming out of the darkness to comfort him. It was always her at moments like this, showing her face and dispelling the darkness that gripped his mind. All she ever had to do was smile, and the power of that smile never failed to work wonders. It had slain him the first of many times at a mixer in his second year of college. It carried him through the hard times of internship when he knew he was going to chuck it all and become a nurse. Forget the fact that he weathered school. Forget the fact that it was a step down from his goals. He was sick of it all, and that was final. Until, of course, he saw her smile, and she told him it was all going to be all right. The chaos of his mind retreated at the sight of her. Sandy was always able to help him face it. And when she said it was going to be all right, there was a certain something in her manner that you just had to believe her. They never expected to become pregnant. They had known that childbirth would be difficult, if not impossible, with Sandy's condition. But sometimes the impossible happened. They learned that the joyous accident had most definitely occurred, and with the dangers in mind, they pressed on nonetheless. Now, this. He stood up, and not sure what good standing up would do, sat once more. He was not sure what good either sitting, standing, or anything else would do, but he remained sitting anyway. He ran a minutely trembling hand through his dark hair and laughed a dry, hollow cough. Never again, he thought, because the first thing we're going to do after all this is over is get those tubes taken care of. I'm pretty sure we can agree that once was wonderful, and now that we've been there, we can do something else now. Honey, he saw himself telling her as she cradled their only child in his arms, I think it's time to move on to other things. He laughed again, louder this time, as if trying to fill the vacant hallways with life, and it rang back at him from all directions. Sandy's smile was always infectious, and he obliged the friendly vision by grinning from ear to ear. He leaned over the table and stared intently at the two boxes of cigars that rested there. A silly last-minute thing, he mused. The gift shop downstairs had them, so he thought to himself, why the hell not, and bought them. They peered back at him as if to ask, well, have we decided which it is yet? Reflecting back, he had no idea whom he meant to hand them out to in the first place, for he was alone here. Hell, he thought, now, I'll run amok through this hospital giving them to everyone if someone will just come out here with some good news. With a finger that mocked steadiness, he stroked the plastic of the pink box. So intent was his focus on the box of cigars that he never heard the doctor, the one whose name he could not remember to save his life, come up on his right. Dr. Harden? He actually saw himself standing bolt upright in surprise and jerking his hand away from the box as if he had been caught doing something that might be considered profane. He did not do this. Instead, he froze there, his fingers still touching the plastic which showcased the box's contents. Only his head turned to face the speaker. He was quite sure his voice had left him. He was positive that he had left it over by the double doors, much like one might leave a set of keys in another pair of pants. When he tried it, however, it appeared to work perfectly. Yes, Dr. Miller? The name had come back to him like a divine providence. If he had ever stopped to look back and think it over, that feeling of instant recall might have been frightening. However, that one moment turned out to be the only thing about this day that never crossed his mind again. The baby is going to be fine, Doctor, Miller told him. It's a strong little boy, fighting and kicking. He caressed the box of pink cigars once more with a hand that felt like someone else's. Then he sat up straight and stared ahead, with knowledge far too sobering for words. But two came. And Sandy? Two. The two of them stared at the letter, unbelieving. The envelope which had carried it faithfully this far lay on the faded tablecloth of the kitchen table, forgotten. One side was torn completely open. Both of his hands gripped the letter with a subtle panic which suggested he was absolutely sure if he were to let go, even for one moment, it would either fly away or disappear completely from view. Her left hand gripped it just below his right, as if she agreed with the idea that it was just a slant unreal to be allowed to stay for long on this plane of existence. They seemed fixated on the object as a whole. All of it was studied with inhuman scrutiny. The onion-skin paper, the half-meaningless letterhead at the top, the no-nonsense Roman font throughout. There was no need to have their eyes move from left to right across the page. They had both perused its contents numerous times. What seemed like 3 days later, she was able to speak. When she did, it was a whisper from another world. This was your mother's father? He had been in deep meditation over the letter, oblivious to his surroundings. Her voice, though faint, still managed to visibly startle him. It was the reaction of a little boy being caught doing something he had been told expressly not to do. He turned his head away from the letter, annoyed that his attention had been shifted from something so valuable. "What?" She pointed at the letter. The long nail of her index finger made a slight scratching sound on the surface of the onion paper. "Don't hurt it," a frantic voice inside her mind said with shrill clarity. "It might not be good if you abuse it in any way. Be careful." She knew it was both her own voice and the voice of her mother. Her mother, who had served as curator of the museum that had looked suspiciously like the house in which she grew up. She cast all this aside for later consideration and returned her full focus to her momentarily dumbfounded husband. "Your mother's father, that's him?" Their abrasiveness escalated with each stunned exchange. He made no move to correct this, but instead slowly turned back to the page they were holding. "Yes, this was him," he said softly, with a vague and unfamiliar tone of recollection and remorse. Inadvertently, he brought the mood back down again, for his words managed to remind both of them that there was death involved somewhere with this. Her flaring nerves began to cool again with this knowledge in place. They throbbed still, however, and she recognized it as a feeling that would linger. It always did in moments like this. Knowing nothing to say at the present time, she said exactly that, and watched the page in his hands intently. He continued, as if he had not finished a complete thought when speaking before. "We only saw him, well, I only saw him twice." He studied the back of his hands with mute interest. "Once when I was just a little kid, and once when I was in junior high. I barely remember him. I know he was old and disgusting, and he didn't look like he had $5 to his name. The thing I remember most, though, was that Mom and Dad constantly talked about his money." He looked at her as if a question had been raised, and then proceeded to answer it. "He got lucky with stocks. Very, very lucky. I don't know if it was all luck or some inside help. Who knows?" His eyes were lost in boxes of reminiscence, while hers looked at the numerical characters on the sheet. A question formed in her mind. "Why you?" Her eyes flicked back to his face. "You said you had only seen him twice."
"Me and my second cousin Frank are his only surviving relatives. The only reason I got more than Frank was maybe because Frank lived around there and Granddad was probably sick of seeing him, where he only had to see me twice."
An utterly inappropriate laugh escaped his lips. He touched the paper in an uncharacteristic gesture of mourning.
"No chance to get sick of me," he repeated.
And as he said this, he lit his fifth cigarette for the day and inhaled from it thoughtfully. "Died 2 days before they took the phone," she commented more to herself than anything else. "We're lucky they tried to find us through the mail." The thought of having this letter never arrive in the first place became almost as terrible as the idea of it suddenly combusting out of existence in front of them. Her hand inadvertently tightened on the idol. "If this pans out like I think it's going to," he told her, smiling, his eyes never leaving the icon of their affection, "having the phone disconnected is going to be the absolute last problem we ever have." This brought a smile to her lips, and she deposited this smile on his cheek with a kiss that was unexpected from both parties. The corners of his lips twitched upward slightly with mild pleasure, and he touched his cheek. She drew back slowly, surprised at herself. She looked out of the kitchen window, past the sun-yellowed curtains there to the overcast sky beyond. No answer there either, and the silence needed to be filled. "Is the baby okay?" It was the only thing she could think of. The grin slowly faded from his face. "Let me go make sure he hadn't climbed out of his crib again." He turned, disgruntled, and left her alone in the kitchen with their prize. She looked the letter over again carefully to make sure there was no mistake. Of course, there was not. She would need to make a call tomorrow while he was at work. She needed to tell the lawyer to call it off, throw out the papers, burn them, whatever. It was all so simple. It was going to get even simpler, it seemed. He called from the other room to report on the condition of the child, and she took a lingering look at the letter, setting it down on the faded tablecloth ever so gently before going to join them.